Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. This week, it's our friend and a guy who knows more about Albany than anybody else, Albany Bureau Chief of the New York Daily News, Ken Lovett. Welcome back, Ken.
Good to be back.
Ken, the big story that has been circulating, other than Trump, you know, another New Yorker, of course, is the separation between the so-called IDC, Independent Democratic Conference, otherwise known as the traitors, by people like, well, me, who have deserted the Democrats to go over and for a few pieces of silver and maybe some committee chairmanships have coalesced with the Republicans to keep them in power. Many of us think that it is Andrew Cuomo himself who is the general for this happening, because both Cuomo's papa and son have been big fans of keeping the Republicans in power. What do you say?
Well, most people think that the governor deliberately or tacitly gave his approval of the IDC Senate GOP arrangement, but now they feel that that arrangement has run its course in the governor's eyes. He's getting a lot of pressure. You know, this is a guy who's going to be up for re-election next year, who's thinking of a potential presidential run in 2020, which means he'd have to go through a Democratic primary. He's taking a lot of heat from the left of the Democratic Party more than ever before, especially since the election of Donald Trump as president, to fix this situation, to bring the Democrats back together, reunification.
Now, the IDC or the traitors have turned around and said, yeah, we could maybe come back, but you have to get rid of one of your two major leaders, Mr. Gianaris from Queens. And the question is whether or not they would be willing to do that.
Well, that's what the governor's people told me in my column on Monday, that it's going to be hard to get this done if Mike Gianaris stays in power. Mike Gianaris is the deputy Senate majority leader under only Andrea Stewart Cousins, who's looking to become the first African-American female leader of the Senate, majority leader of the Senate. But Gianaris also holds another role, which is he heads up the Democratic Senate Campaign Committee.
He gets the money.
He gets the money. He's in charge of the races. And he and Jeff Klein, who heads up the IDC, the Independent Democrats, can't stand each other. It's one of the best feuds in Albany politics, and there's a lot of feuds in Albany politics, but this is really one of the most heated. And the governor's people told me this cannot get done, reunification, if Gianaris is still in place. That really angered Andrea Stewart Cousins, the Senate mainline Senate Democratic leader, who said, why am I the only leader where people are trying to tell me who I can or can't have as my deputy? That's not fair. I pick my deputy. So whether it's a negotiating tactic, whether the governor, who's no fan of Gianaris and vice versa, was just deciding to pick on him on an August Monday, who knows? But certainly that's out there now. Gianaris has been very critical of the governor. He's been critical, particularly of late, of his handling of the mass transit situation down in the city. And he's been very open about that criticism. So I don't know if this was the governor just slamming back at him or if it's a real issue. But there's no doubt that Klein and Gianaris hate each other and that the governor can't stand Gianaris as well.
That's a great summary, Ken Lovett. But I guess my question here is, since we have to suspect that this is Cuomo coming down hard on Gianaris, just because, as I have often said about the governor, this is the governor's thinking, he isn't me, so he must be bad. So he does not play well with any of his contemporaries.
No, he doesn't. He does not play in the sandbox well. The only one he's getting along with of any real prominence right now in Democratic leadership is really the Attorney General, Eric Schneiderman. There seems to be an agreement to keep hands off each other. But
yeah, but they didn't start out well.
They did not start out well. But right now he's fighting with Tom DiNapoli, the comptroller. He's fighting with the Senate Democrats. He's fighting, you know, with a lot of, with obviously Mayor de Blasio in New York City. That's a feud, a heavyweight feud. So it's, you know, the governor versus a lot of Democrats. And the left can't stand him right now either, or a lot of people on the left. I shouldn't say all of them.
So I guess the next obvious question, Ken, is Cuomo has to run in 2018 as governor. He doesn't have to, but he's gonna. He says he's gonna. Could he lose?
I think it would be hard for him to lose, but there's certainly things out there that could trip him up and could end up costing him the election. If the subway situation in New York City gets really, well, it's bad, but if it gets a lot worse, that could harm him, particularly because Andrew Cuomo's base is in downstate New York City and the surrounding suburbs. That's why he won re-election 4 years ago, or 3 years ago. It was certainly not because of upstate where his numbers are bad, although he's good in population centers like Buffalo. But he needs New York City. If they feel that it's getting worse, the riders, you know, you're talking millions of people who use the system every day, and if they feel that this is not improving, they're going to look for someone to blame, and that could hurt the governor. And then you have some corruption trials coming up that could hurt the governor.
Now, the governor has tried to point to Mayor de Blasio as one of the potential problems in the mass transit crisis. But he screwed himself, if you want a technical term that we political scientists use, by claiming all the credit for having built the Second Avenue subway.
That's the thing. He says, I'm not in charge of the Second Avenue subway, and I'm not in charge of the MTA. And then there's video of him saying, if the Second Avenue subway doesn't open up on time, blame me, you know, knowing that it was going to open up on time on New Year's Day. So you can't take all the credit for the positive and then say, I don't know what you're talking about when it comes to the negative. And he's kind of gone back and forth on that. At times he takes credit and ownership and says, I'm going to fix it. And then at times he says, well, it's really de Blasio and others who have to be part of this as well. But I think he's recognizing now that it falls in his lap, and you're seeing him take some action.
I see that a guy who I really have always liked very much, Herman Denny Farrell, is set to retire. He's 85 years old after 42 years in the legislature. I used to be riding my bike, and the phone would ring inside, you know, an inside bike. The phone would ring, and there would be Denny. He just wanted to talk, and he's great. He's a terrific character. What a sad thing to see somebody like that go.
Yeah, 42 years. I think it's time for him. I think people noticed this year, and he had openly admitted it to me when I reported it this week, that he noticed it was harder for him to do the job. But he's certainly a legend up here, you know, for someone who's been...
He was Ways and Means, which is number two, really.
Number two. And it's not just that he was here 42 years, because you could be here 42 years and, you know, just be a backbencher too, you know, have a committee but not really do anything. Denny garnered a lot of respect. You know, you would watch him debate the budget. You would watch him sit through these budget hearings. And he knew what he was doing. He knew what he was talking about. He's someone who had stature. He was a former state party committee chairman for the Democrats and a Manhattan County Democratic committee chairman. Both people on both sides of the aisle really liked him and are sad to see him go. End of an era.
Well, one of the things, of course, that was very helpful to the Democrats is that Denny Farrell happens to be black. Is that going to be a requisite in whoever takes his place?
I don't think so. I don't think for Ways and Means. I mean, that's really not a huge issue within the Assembly. You're hearing it more now with the Senate that the Andrew Stewart Cousins, who's black, is being denied the majority leader. Why is what would be the first black woman to head the Senate? Why is she being denied a rightful place when the Democrats have, you know, or did up until a few days ago, a majority of members in the Senate, but they don't control it. But you know, you have a African American speaker in the Assembly. You have African American committee chairs. I think I don't think it's going to be that it has to be someone who's African American.
So we do know that the speaker has immense powers in the New York State Assembly. It's sort of an oligarchy. But does the number two guy play an important role?
Ways and Means, yeah. You know, it's interesting. When I was talking to Denny, he said there's three jobs. He said had he been on any other committee, he probably would have stepped down as committee chair but kept serving in the Assembly. He said, but the speaker, the majority leader, and the Ways and Means committee chairman, he said, it's kind of like being president. You do it, and then you're gone. You don't just then go back into the rank and file. So no, it is a powerful position. All the money goes through there, and you know, different spending. Now, ultimately, the speaker
decides
with the members. But no, the Ways and Means chairman has a say.
And Ken Lovett, does this speaker expect to be here forever?
That's a good question. He's only been here 3 years. I think at the end of this legislative session, you saw him solidify his power. You know, after the first year, you didn't know what was going to happen. After the second year, even there were some questions, although he had a good year last year. But I think this year you
We're talking about Speaker Hastie,
yes,
of course,
and Carl Bronx. Hastie from the Bronx.
Boss of the Bronx, now boss of the Assembly.
And you saw his members really solidify behind him. They like him. They feel he listens to them, unlike his predecessor, Sheldon Silver. So I don't know if he'll be here forever like Silver was, because let's face it, Silver was the second longest serving speaker. So it's not like people were here 2 decades
sure.
often. But I would think he'd be here another few years at least.
Is there any incipient opposition to the guy?
No, not right now. People like him. You know, Republicans like Hastie. You know, you see a guy like Steve McLaughlin from Troy, an assemblyman, a Republican. He's very outspoken, despised Silver. You see him talking behind the scenes, like, you know, in behind the chamber with Hastie all the time. The Republicans like him. Doesn't mean they agree with his positions, but they like him personally, whereas they really despise Silver.
Okay, so now we have people lining up to run against Cuomo. The one Republican who has surfaced, you've reported on this, is a guy named DeFrancisco from Syracuse. What kind of shot does a guy like that have?
Oh, I don't think he has much of a shot. Lack of name recognition, lack of, huge financial situation, and a conservative Republican, which is really hard in New York. There's a couple of Republicans who are out there. There's the Westchester County executive,
Again.
Rob Astorino, who lost to Cuomo and has to win his own reelection bid in Westchester this November before he decides. There's business turnaround expert Harry Wilson, who actually would be an interesting candidate because he could partially self-fund, and he's not as to the right as a lot of it. So the question is, can he get through a primary if it came to that? And then you also have a Dutchess County executive, Mark Molinaro. A lot of people, I think, see as more of a long shot. He's getting his name out there, probably for the future, you know, part of the bench for the future.
But also very well-liked among many people.
Yes.
I like him.
Yeah, and then there's, of course, who says he's still thinking about it, who I can't imagine would have a shot, although I could see him potentially winning the nomination, Carl Palladino out of Buffalo, who lost to Cuomo big time in 2010 and is very bombastic and outspoken in the Trump vein of things. Even before Donald Trump was a candidate, you had Carl Palladino basically the same type of candidacy.
We do have to have, Ken Lovett, we do have to have a vote on whether to have a constitutional convention. It's in our Constitution. I have some very good friends, like Professor Gerald Benjamin, one of my best friends, as a matter of fact, in the world. And you and I were both at his daughter's wedding, weren't
yes.
we? Yeah. And he's a big fan of the Constitutional Convention and some other people who were closely associated with Mario Cuomo. But everybody seems to be lining up against this. We got a governor who doesn't like it as of now. We have the legislative leaders who hate it, which is, I think, the best reason for voting for it. We have the unions. So a lot of people are really opposed to this happening. I'm told by inside sources, they have inside polling that shows it's up in the air, that it's sort of 50-50. I find it hard to believe, but what do you make of it?
I think not many people in the public are paying attention, and a lot of the people who are the quote-unquote political insiders oppose it right now. And as you said, I mean, the governor has been on the fence. You know, he basically says he supports it in concept, but not if it's going to be controlled by the same special interests, you know,
right.
That always happens.
Which
it will be. So he's not going to go out for it. The leaders and the interest groups, they're all on both sides. You have conservative interest groups and, you know, you have anti-abortion groups and pro-abortion groups who are on the same side and opposing it because they fear that a well-funded effort by certain people could help sway against their issues. The environmentalists are against it, a lot of them. And what's going to make it even harder on the issue is right now the issue is going to be on the backside of the ballot. So it's an off year anyway, so you're not going to get a huge turnout.
A lot of people don't turn the ballot
and
over.
And then a lot of people don't turn the ballot over. So
been there, done that.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting to see. You're going to really have to want to vote for it.
There is something you've reported on widely, and that's Andrea Stewart Cousins, the aforementioned leader of the Senate minority, who probably could make a very good argument she should be the majority leader, and is basically implying, I think, if I'm reading this correctly, racism that she and gender, that she has not been elected as the head, even though she has more Democrats than others. But also there was a bit of a flare-up in which she referred to her skin color.
Yeah, the governor, this was in the New York Times first, the governor and the Senate Democrats were having a meeting about what can we do for reconciliation of the chamber, in the chamber. And at one point, the governor said something to the effect, you should really listen to Jeff Klein. He knows how to win elections. He knows the suburbs. You know, you guys don't. And Stewart Cousins looked at him and basically said, paraphrasing, of course, you know, Mr. Governor, you look at me and you see a black woman who you think is from New York City. I represent Westchester. I am the suburbs. I know the suburbs. Jeff Klein isn't from the suburbs. And so he's from the Bronx. So
certainly is.
Yeah, so that she really went after the governor. And then in trying to defend the governor in some way, a guy named Dan Loeb, a billionaire investor who's big in the charter school industry, decided to put up a Facebook post that said, Andrea Stewart Cousins, in supporting the teacher unions but not charter schools, has hurt more minority kids, more black kids, than the KKK. And that became a huge controversy because, you know, Andrea Stewart Cousins, first of all, is black, and to suggest she's hurting more, you know, minority kids and the KKK. The governor and others came under pressure to return the donations. The governor has received hundreds of thousands of dollars from Loeb over the years. He quickly distanced himself from the comments and called them, you know, abhorrent, but he didn't return the money. The only public official who said he's returning the money is New York City Comptroller Scott Stringer.
Speaking of controllers, how is our controller Tom DiNapoli doing?
He's still out there. He's punching away. You know, he's doing his audits, you know, fair with, you know, some of them are critical of the governor, some aren't. But it was interesting. I think the governor's trying to maybe for the time being tamp down the tensions with him because he put out a critical audit the other week of the comptroller, and they kind of let that one slide. They didn't punch back at him as hard. The governor didn't. And, you know, they've been really hitting hard. These audits are, they're not professional. They're, you know, they're political. And, you know, DiNapoli just constantly says, we're just doing our job.
Is he getting more popular? When he ran the first time, he came out of the legislature. I think people had their doubts. I'm a huge follower and fan of his. But is there an indication that he is winning people's hearts?
I don't think anybody really knows. Now, the polls show that few people know the state comptroller. Those who do like him. Look, you know, a little fun fact for you. You know, Tom DiNapoli got the most number of votes in 2014 than any other statewide candidate.
Sure.
More votes than Schneiderman as AG and more votes than Governor Cuomo, who got the third number.
Well, Cuomo did a very stupid thing, if you want my opinion, and probably don't. But but he did a very stupid thing in that he took away some of the pre-audit function from DiNapoli. After all, we have a constitutionally authorized named state comptroller. So what Cuomo did and why the legislature went along with him, I'll never know. But said, okay, we're changing the rules. You can't audit some of these not-for-profit foundations, and he said that to the controller, and he said, we'll do it ourselves, which is sort of like the fox guarding the hen house, and he was pretty well beaten up for that.
He was, but you know what? The legislature made some noise about fixing that situation this year and ultimately backed down. The governor fought him on it, and the legislature backed down. Look, I think the comptroller's happy, but look, there are a lot of people upset with the governor right now. You've got four people whose names are out there as possible Democratic primary challengers to
They him. Are.
They are actress Cynthia Nixon from Sex and the City. People know her. She's been an education advocate in the state.
Silliness. She's not going to do it.
I don't think she'll do it. Syracuse Mayor Stephanie Miner.
Which is the one I'd like to see do it. But when polls come out, nobody knows who she is. And even in her own town of Syracuse, I don't think she's doing that well.
No, matter of fact, she's very popular in the city of Syracuse, except she's losing to Cuomo, according to a Siena poll that came out this week. You've got former state senator Terry Gibson, which is a fallacy. You know, he's from the Hudson Valley. He lost his own district the last two times he ran. I can't imagine he's going to mount a statewide campaign against a sitting governor with $26 million in his campaigns. And the latest one to come out, which I also think is a long shot, I reported on Monday that City Councilman Jumaane Williams, who is an African-American, says he's been approached about running, and he wouldn't rule it out, although he says he's focusing on becoming city council speaker. What's interesting about Williams is he is African-American, he is from New York City, and that's where Cuomo's base is. So theoretically, if he did run, he could cut into Cuomo's base, but I'd be surprised if ultimately he did. I think a lot of people are trying now to put their names out there in hopes of A, getting attention for themselves, but also to push the governor more to the left. Hey, you have a real challenge here. You know, in the case of Cynthia Nixon, you know, she'd probably like to see more funding to make good on the campaign for fiscal equity lawsuit. You know, hey, governor, you know, you've got a budget coming out in January. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see funding for that issue.
Well, the prospects of having a top-flight primary opponent are really not there for Cuomo.
I think his numbers would have to really come crashing down, and they're not. Yeah, they're not there. The guy's got $26 million. He's got name recognition. And the polls show that among liberals, which is what would dominate, as much as Cuomo calls them, and he's not wrong, the professional left, people who are paid to be activists, but among liberals, according to all the polls, the last one, I think, 68% supported him. He's still popular in New York City. His numbers went down with the transit crisis, but he's still popular in New York City. He's still popular among liberals. So it's going to be really difficult to topple him. Not impossible. There's some storm clouds on the horizon, but it would be difficult.
So now the governor, looking at the Charlottesville results, and we know he does that. He did it with Sandy Hook and the SAFE Act, his gun control measure. The governor is now talking about having the Army rename some of the streets, like Robert E. Lee Street or whatever, Boulevard.
And Stonewall Jackson.
Stonewall Jackson.
There's a military base in New York City that has two streets, one named after Jackson, one after Robert E. Lee. And they did that, they say, after the Civil War ended in the hopes of reconciliation. And so the Army was asked a while back to change those names by some Congress members. And on August 7th, they said no. They said, you know, it was done in the spirit of reconciliation. If we did it now, it would reopen old wounds and it would be not a good thing to do. After Charlottesville this week, Cuomo has been every day had one or more initiatives that he's putting out there, whether it's a bill to expand the state hate crimes law or a petition calling on Trump to call out these, you know, hate mongers. He's had something, and on Wednesday it was, hey, Army, he sent a letter to the Secretary of Defense, said, can you reconsider the decision and rename those streets? He also was promoting the fact that CUNY was getting rid of two busts in their hall of busts, one of Robert E. Lee and one of Stonewall Jackson, who both went to West Point, both were in the military decades before they fought in the Civil War.
He wants to light up the bridges with, you know, multicolored lights and says it'll be good for New York. He's getting a lot of resistance to that because people say he should spend the money on more important things.
Yeah, and now they're not even saying how much it is. I mean, they had said it would be a couple $100 million, as much as $260 million or $350 million, and it was going to come out of the MTA, and then the MTA crisis hit, and then he said, oh, it's not coming out of the MTA. It's coming out of, I think, NYSERDA or a different state of
the MTA,
public authority.
The MTA is a tough one because they're about to raise the rates on the thruway because of the new.
Well, that's the Port Authority.
Let's do that again. Okay. So is your assessment that he can make this happen, or that it should happen?
Whether it should is not my job. There's a lot of opposition to it, saying that money could be better spent helping fix the subway crisis. Will it happen? I would not be surprised. He's found different ways to fund it, and although he hasn't really outlined that yet. And we'll have to see. But he's really gung-ho on this, and he's really doubled and tripled down on it.
It's always wonderful to talk to our friend Ken Lovett of the New York Daily News. His column is a must-read each week. You can read it by going to the news, or you could go to Empire page and see how what they make of it there. They always carry it at the top of the page. So, Ken Lovett, thank you for being with us. We do appreciate it.
Thank you.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. We'll be right back.